This morning, we'd like to offer some instructions about practicing. The title for this retreat, the title I chose for the retreat is Mindfulness and Wisdom. And that's essentially what we are cultivating here. A present moment awareness. And probably we'll be using the term awareness a lot. Mostly meaning it's synonymous with mindfulness. And so we cultivate this present moment awareness. And yet, as Sayadaw Utejaniya says often, mindfulness alone or awareness alone isn't enough. We have to have a context, an orientation towards wisdom for that present moment awareness to be leading us in the direction of freedom, leading us in the direction of letting go of the qualities, the factors of minds that catch us up, that have us reactive, those factors of greed, aversion, and delusion. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about both sides of this, the present moment awareness and the wisdom this morning. Most of you, I think, have practiced quite a bit with mindfulness and cultivated the capacity to be present, to be here, aware of what's happening while it's happening. There's so many good reasons for this. I think one of the key ones is that the present moment is the only place anything happens, and so being here for it, being available to meet what's happening in the present moment, means that we are here for our lives. If we're not present, available, meeting our experience in the present moment, we're missing our lives. A couple of days ago, I was listening to an NPR show called the TED Radio Hour, and it was exploring happiness. And there were three key points that they made during the course of the program about how we can be happier. And the first one. Was some research. This person had done research on what makes people happy. What are the factors that make people happy? And he has, in order to gather this information, he created this iPhone app, and he sends text messages to people, you know, 3-4 times a day, and asks a series of questions, you know, what are you doing? What's going on? And then, you know, how happy are you? And in looking at all of this data that he's gathered, he said the single most important factor that makes people more unhappy is that their minds are wandering. When people's minds wander, they report less happiness. Whether their minds are wandering away from something pleasant or unpleasant, when the minds are wandering, people self-describe that they are less happy. And so present moment awareness also, as the Buddha highlighted, leads to happiness. As much as we think that when our minds wander away from something unpleasant, I mean, we've all created strategies. Many of us have created strategies when something is difficult is happening. The mind wanders and create something pleasant. You know, instead of being struggling with this difficult problem, we're fantasizing about being on a beach somewhere or having fun somewhere. As I reflect on why that doesn't really make us happy, it's partly, I think, because that happiness is so fleeting, and the mind understands when it wakes up from that it's not a true kind of happiness. And we're right back where we were. So, present moment awareness is the path to happiness. One of the things that happens as we come into the present moment, I mean, it sounds lovely. Oh yes, let's be present for our lives. Let's be aware for our, you know, in the abstract, perhaps that sounds ideal, and it sounds, you know, kind of delightful. Well, yes, let's be here for our lives. But so much of what we wake up to is challenging, painful. We wake up to reactivity. We wake up to anger and frustration. And the paradoxical thing, as I mentioned last night, is that being present for those non-reactive, open to, oh, anger's happening right now, frustration's happening right now, as we can become aware of those with mindfulness, holding them with, not feeding them, not inclining towards feeding and fueling the reactivity, but being present for it and allowing and observing, that very practice begins to transform those patterns. Sometimes it's said that this kind of mindfulness of our reactive patterns, when we see greed, aversion, delusion arising, and we are present for them, when we see that happening, the suffering, the difficulty that creates for us, is the kind of suffering that leads to the end of suffering. And so we begin to appreciate the capacity of mindfulness to meet these challenging patterns. And this is really where the wisdom comes in. This is the place where being present for what's happening, beginning to understand the distinction between what leads to more greed, more aversion, more delusion, more suffering, and what takes us in the direction of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, what takes us in the direction of freedom. This is one of the key definitions of wisdom in the texts, in the Buddhist texts, is understanding that with respect to suffering, greed, aversion, and delusion, when they are cultivated, when they are acted on, when they are not seen with mindfulness and wisdom, tend to entrench us in those patterns. As we cultivate non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, which begins by being available to watch greed, aversion, and delusion in a non-reactive way, that's the beginning of cultivating non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion around watching those patterns. Non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, we can think of in the positive as love, wisdom, generosity. There's a whole host of beautiful qualities of mind that are cultivated as we walk this path. And so understanding the difference, recognizing what is what leads, as we observe our minds, we see that as greed, aversion, and delusion are present in our minds, that we do experience suffering. And so we begin to understand a cause and effect relationship between those patterns and the way that we are navigating the world and feeling stress, suffering, unhappiness, dissatisfaction. We also begin to see that there is an agency in the mind, an ability to shape experience. Sometimes we can see when reactive patterns are in the mind. With mindfulness, we can begin to see, this isn't so helpful. May be able to let it go. Maybe. May be able to not hold on to a belief or a view that is inclining the mind in that direction. I need this. I have to have that. We can see, well, actually, I don't need this. This is not necessary right now. And then the mind can start to let go of those reactive patterns. But so much of our practice is where we recognize that we are caught by a pattern, a reactive pattern, and we don't know how to stop it. But what we can learn to do in that situation is learn to be present with it. Learn how to ride the wave of it without acting on it. It's like it's been set in motion. It's like a car traveling 100 miles an hour down the freeway. Think of that as being your reactive mind, careening down the freeway at 100 miles an hour. What mindfulness does is kind of like, or in this analogy, what mindfulness does is kind of like putting the car into neutral. It doesn't have the car come to a stop immediately, but with the car in neutral, it's going to come to a stop, and that you just have to be able to steer while that's happening. So it's very similar in our minds, that as the reactive patterns have arisen, they're here, they've got this momentum to them, and sometimes mindfulness is strong enough to cut through the pattern very quickly, but very often it's more like putting the mind into neutral and learning how to navigate while that pattern is unfolding, so that there's not a re-entrenchment, so that we're not re-engaging the gears and stepping on the accelerator again, but skillfully navigating as that pattern comes to a halt, winds down in a very natural way. And so we cultivate the skill of learning how to be with these patterns. The challenge of that, again, the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. So we cultivate this present moment awareness with an interest in understanding our minds, seeing how these patterns create our suffering. We begin to understand the cause and effect relationship between reactive patterns and our suffering. We understand the cause and effect relationship between mindfulness and moving towards freedom, mindfulness and wisdom and moving towards freedom. So that's a little bit about kind of the framework of why we practice and the benefit of practice. And now I'd like to share a little bit about what we practice. As I said last night, we open to all of our experience in this practice. It's primarily a receptive awareness rather than a directed awareness. Receiving just what's already happening. Opening to what's obvious in the moment, as opposed to saying, okay, I'm going to pay attention to my breath right now. There is a place for that in this practice, but that is not the basic instruction. We can use that as a skillful means at times. The basic instruction is this receptive awareness. Receptive awareness, opening to all experience, and from time to time checking our relationship to the experience. There's three basic instructions here. Checking, are you aware? What are you aware of? And occasionally checking, what's the relationship to what I'm aware of? What's the attitude? And yet, as I said last night, this is not simple. So many habits, so many patterns of mind that tend to take us away from this simplicity. And so I'd like to explore a little bit of ways to encourage this simplicity of practice. The first tool is relaxation. The relaxed mind is kind of naturally aware. Our system is designed to be aware. You look at a baby is aware in the present moment, maybe not aware that they are aware yet. But there's a very natural functioning of mind. We don't have to do awareness. The system does it. It happens. And when we relax and let go of the ways that we have been pulling our minds this way and that way, and when we relax the body, relax the mind, we can find actually that when that relaxation happens, there's a natural awareness already present. And we don't have to do that awareness. In fact, we can't do awareness. We can become aware of it. And then we can remind ourselves to be attentive. But awareness itself is a very natural functioning of mind. And so at the start, it's often really helpful to relax the body, relax the mind. And as I speak now, I'm going to suggest often it's helpful to consciously relax the body. It's often helpful to check in and see, is there tension held in the face and neck and shoulders? And soften that, relax that. Relaxing the hands, the arms. Just softening the muscles. Relaxing the chest and upper back. Stomach, abdomen, middle and lower back. Relaxing the hips, the legs. Just doing a brief scan through the body. Relaxing the feet. Scanning the body, seeing if there's tension. Checking back into the face, relaxing the brow around the eyes, the mouth, the jaw. And perhaps also checking inside the body. Sometimes we can consciously release tension that's held inside the body if we just notice, how's the inside of the throat? Can you soften inside of the throat? Relax the heart. Relax the stomach, the intestines. And then sometimes it's possible, having consciously relaxed the body, sometimes the mind actually knows a way to relax that we aren't consciously aware of. And so you can try dropping a request into your system. May the body relax. Or are you willing to relax a little more, body? Is there more relaxation available? So you can try that. And just see if there's some wisdom in the mind that knows how to let something go that we don't consciously know how to release. May the body relax. And may the mind relax. Relaxing the mind is letting go of mental tension, letting go of ways that the mind habitually tends to gravitate to past and future, think, worry, plan, organize, daydream. Those patterns that take us away from the present moment. Is there a possibility to relax the mind? May the mind relax. As the body and mind relax, the next aspect to explore is, are you aware? In this relaxation, do you know that you are aware? It can be helpful to drop that question in. Is awareness here? Or am I aware? Or maybe simply aware? Notice that you are aware. If you even can ask the question, the answer is yes. And yet sometimes it's not so obvious how we know we're aware. That's actually okay. In my own experience, this understanding of what it means, what the experience of awareness is, comes slowly over time. It's something we get familiar with through this exploration. Am I aware? Is awareness present? And so this question or this exploration, am I aware, is actually important. Even though the answer is yes, the question begins to orient us to the experience of awareness itself. Even if it's not clear to begin with, check in. Am I aware? Yes. Okay, you know that you're aware. And then what's obvious? What's the most obvious experience? Relax and take in. What's obvious right now? Often, body sensation is obvious. Body sensation is pretty familiar to us. You may notice, you know, just the kind of obvious pressures of body. The pressure of your hips against the chair, a cushion, or bench, or the contact points of hands. This is where the distinction between directing the attention and receiving what's obvious comes in. We can choose to pick something to be aware of. And if you find, as you relax and open to, oh, am I aware? If in checking what's obvious, the mind flails, especially those of you who are newer to practice, then just pick something that is kind of strong for you and let the attention land there. That's the distinction. Do we consciously choose what to pay attention to, or do we relax and notice what's already obvious? Maybe body sensations, maybe emotions, maybe thoughts, maybe sound, maybe sight if your eyes are open. What's obvious now? And what's obvious now? Just noticing moment after moment. Relax. Are you aware? What's obvious? Without our conscious choice, awareness naturally attends to something. We don't have to do that work. What is it that is obvious in this moment? The next aspect of this practice is around the effort, how we apply effort. The first time I went to practice with Sayadaw Utejaniya, the first instruction he gave me was, the only work you need to give your mind is to remind yourself to be aware. It actually doesn't take very much work to remind ourselves to be aware. It doesn't take very much effort to be aware at all. Right now, in a moment, notice the sound of my voice. You're hearing. Hearing's already happening. Notice the sensations of your hands. This is me directing the attention for you. Notice the contact of your hips against the chair or cushion or bench. How much work does it take? How hard is it to be aware? In a moment, it's not very hard. In a moment, it's very natural as we, in this case, as I suggest, notice experience of hearing. It's like there it is. Very little work. It doesn't take much effort to be present for a moment. Where we do get caught up and where it is more difficult is sustaining the attention moment after moment. Often this is where our struggle happens with the meditation, because we have a kind of a habit, a way of engaging in activity and engaging with effort, that we think, okay, in order to do something, I need to really bring my effort in. With the meditation, it's more like connecting with that light touch. Can you be aware in this moment? Are you aware in this moment? How about in this moment? Relax. How about in this moment? What's obvious? The effort that we make in this practice is a gentle persistence. Just moment after moment, reminding ourselves to be aware. There's an analogy I sometimes use around this kind of effort. If you have a hula hoop, and you're playing one of those games where you're trying to roll the hula hoop along next to you, keep it going. You have you can tap it with your hand or have a stick to tap it and move it along. If you try to start the momentum of that hula hoop by giving the hula hoop a great whack, it's going to get way out ahead of you and be very wobbly. You're not going to be able to control it very well. But if you start by giving it gentle pushes, just very light taps, tap, 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 you can control the direction. You can stay with the hula hoop. And as the momentum gets going with that hula hoop, you can back off on the tapping. You can watch the hula hoop, let it roll for a while, stay up with it. And then as you see it start to get wobbly, give it a little bit of a tap again. Sometimes also use a scooter analogy, standing on a scooter and giving taps on the ground. And just that gentle tap, tap, tap to get the momentum going. And then you can ride the scooter for a while. You get the sense of a wobbliness of the scooter. You put your foot down and tap a few more times gently to stabilize it and ride some more. In a similar way, the effort that we make to be aware is this light touch. Gentle reminders. It's the frequency that is the effort. How frequently we remind ourselves to be aware. And as the momentum of mindfulness develops, we can get familiar with that quality of awareness. We get familiar with what it feels like to be aware. And we start to get familiar with what it feels like for that mindfulness to get a little wobbly. And then we can reconnect, remind ourselves, connect, be aware again. So this is the way we make effort in this practice. A gentle reminding, am I aware? What's obvious? We can use those questions as the gentle reminders, if you wish. Sometimes it can help to shorten them. Aware of what? Over time, and it's helpful, I think, initially to use those as gentle reminders in your mind. But over time, they don't need to be words in the mind. It becomes the orientation of the mind. There's just this movement towards aware of what without saying it in our minds. So we cultivate relaxation. With the relaxation, there's a natural awareness that is possible. And we encourage that natural awareness with these gentle reminders. Mindfulness and effort together, this awareness with the gentle, persistent effort, those two together are what stabilizes the mind in concentration. Concentration in this practice is what's called moment-to-moment concentration. The stability of the mind to be present, not pulled out into past or future, not caught by thoughts, but aware of the stream, the flow of experience. Concentration does not require us to stay with one object. That's a form of concentration, one-pointed concentration. That is very useful at times in our practice. That is not what we are practicing and cultivating explicitly here. Sometimes it can happen, and I've had it happen where I've been practicing this form of open awareness, and at some point the mind just naturally gravitates to a single object and moves into one-pointed concentration. So it can happen. It's not that we try to avoid it. But it's also not the aim of the practice. The aim is stability of mind with whatever is happening. Stability, non-reactive mind, to be here just for moment to moment. What's happening? What's happening? What's happening? With the flow of experience. We don't try to control our experience. We don't try to stop our experience. We don't try to change our experience. We open to what is already happening and cultivate mindfulness, wise mindfulness, wise effort, and wise concentration right there. Those three factors of the Eightfold Path. The mind will wander. Absolutely, the mind will wander. And sometimes, if this is a new practice for you, you may find that it seems the mind wanders more without having, you know, many people come to this practice having started, you know, been taught and have a practice of beginning their practice with staying with a primary object until the mind gets more stable with that before opening up to other experience. And sometimes it feels like when we just start right from opening up to all experience, it can feel like the mind wanders more. And it may at first wander more, but that's okay. We just work with that. So as soon as you notice that the mind has been wandering, in that moment that you notice, awareness is already back. In that moment, you are aware. When the mind is wandering, we're not aware. You know, the mind is wandering. There's no particular instruction of thing to do. As soon as you notice, you're already aware. In that moment, can you recognize awareness itself? Ah, awareness is back. What is it to be aware again? And what is obvious in that moment? Often, when the mind goes off into thought, because it's wandered into some terrain, you know, maybe it's wandered into the work we were doing yesterday or the preparations or something that we forgot that we didn't do before we left for retreat. You know, the mind will wander into terrain where there's some reactivity, perhaps. Not always, but sometimes the mind wanders into arguments or plans or agendas where there's some tension. And the mind having wandered into that terrain, in the moment that mindfulness returns, it's really helpful to take in, how is the mind right now having been wandering? We are not particularly saying, oh, the mind has returned from wandering, come back to the breath. We are instead looking at what is here now, the mind having been wandering. What's the experience? Is there tension in the mind? Is there frustration in the mind? Is there tension in the body? What's obvious in that moment will often reveal something of what has been going on. So you just wake up to what is in that moment. If you find there is tension that has crept into body and mind, helpful to come back to relaxation at that point. Relax the body. Relax the mind, recognize the natural awareness that can be present as the body and mind relax, and just continue. Am I aware? What am I aware of? I'm going to give you a little carrot about this practice of simply becoming aware after the mind has wandered. In my exploration of this, noticing just the moment, you know, just the moment of mindfulness returning. Without the agenda to do something else with that moment, without the agenda to say, oh, come back to the breath, but, oh, I'm back, what's happening? What I've discovered is that quite a bit of the time, and more as the retreat goes on, you know, initially in the first few days, the mind often wanders into, you know, past, future, things we didn't finish, reactivities, you know, all kinds of things like that. But often, way more often than I would have expected, when I wake up from a wandering mind, the mind is actually more peaceful, more settled, more relaxed than it was before my mind wandered. Sometimes our minds find their way to more settledness in the wandering. And if we have an agenda when we wake up to say, oh, mind wandered, come back to the breath, we may miss that settledness. So check it out for yourself. When the mind returns from wandering, what is the experience? Is there ease? Is there calm? Is there peace? Is there frustration? Is there confusion? Is there anxiety? What's there? I propose that as the retreat goes on, you may more and more see that in that moment, there's actually quite a bit of peace, calm, that may be there. So be available for it. The other lovely thing about that moment is that it really points to the effortless nature of awareness. Because that moment of mindfulness returning after the mind has been wandering, you didn't do that. There was no effort that you consciously made to have that moment of mindfulness arise. It's effortless mindfulness arising in that moment. You can begin to get a flavor of that very natural awareness that's possible in that moment. The non-constructed or the non-active nature, the non-doing nature of that, of mindfulness, of awareness. So that moment of mindfulness returning is a fantastic moment. Be there for it. Appreciate it and recognize, see if you can recognize what it has to show you. It has to show you the natural nature of awareness and what it reveals in that moment. If in the moment of that, so I would suggest this kind of process around waking up, you know, notice that you've become aware. Notice that mindfulness has returned. See if you can check into that. See how you are. What is the landscape that has been created with the mind wandering? If there's tension, relax. If there's more relaxation, appreciate it. And simply continue. What's obvious? What's obvious? What's obvious? It's really quite simple. If you find that there's a strong pull back to thinking that is stronger than your capacity to be mindful, then it may be helpful to choose something to direct the attention to. At that point, if the pull of the mind wandering and the simple just, oh, am I aware? What am I aware of? Isn't strong enough to meet that pull? Then let yourself land on a primary object, the breath perhaps, the breath for a few moments to reconnect with the present moment. And then continue with, oh, am I aware? You know, you don't have to stay with the primary object for very long. But it can serve as a way to kind of, you know, cut that, you know, that pull towards some strong experience. And we'll talk more about working with strong experience as the days go on. So, relax. Am I aware? What am I aware of? And then the last piece of the instruction really begins to point to how wisdom begins to inform our practice. There's wisdom in the simple curiosity of meeting moment-to-moment experience. And yet very often as we meet our experience, there is a kind of a hidden attitude or a hidden agenda in the mind, a relationship to experience. And this is where suffering often creeps in this area. So we need to learn to observe wisely, because our habit of meeting experience often contains our habits of greed, aversion, and delusion. And so this is, you know, these two aspects of experience. There's what we are experiencing, what we sometimes call the object of experience. And then there's how we are experience, how the mind is relating to the experience. So there's what's happening and how we're relating to it. It's very helpful to check in from time to time. What's the attitude? What's my relationship to experience? The way we are relating to experience is really how the practice unfolds. Noticing that relationship. And actually, whatever we're paying attention to, the object of experience, it's not so important. Any object is fine. How we are attending to that object is really where suffering comes in or freedom comes in. And so this cultivation of recognizing the relationship to experience is a big part of this practice. We become aware of a filter or a view or an attitude of how we are paying attention. And so we can check in again with a question. What's my relationship to experience? What's my attitude? Often, when we check into that, we may see, it may reveal. And it's not that we try to find what the attitude is. And, you know, using questions, I need to take care to point out that as we use questions, it doesn't mean that we try to figure it out. Dropping in a question like that, what's the attitude? It's not about you trying to find the answer. But dropping that question in, it can begin to orient the mind to being curious about it. Sometimes just simply asking the question can open the mind to recognize, oh, I don't like what's happening right now. Something very simple, very clear, that is revealed just through simply checking. What's the attitude? So wise attitude, or what Saito Tejaniya calls right attitude, is a way of being with experience that allows you to feel at ease with whatever is happening. This is essentially balanced attitude. Wrong attitude is, or let's say, you know, attitude that will destabilize the mind, are reactions of greed, aversion, or delusion around what's happening. And very often when we check in, so we have four basic flavors of attitude: greed, aversion, confusion, delusion, and balance of mind, or wise attitude. And so when we check into that question, we may see any of those flavors. We cultivate the balanced attitude by being open to receiving and being with the unbalanced attitudes. And so the very revealing, oh, what's the attitude? Oh, I don't like what's happening. What happens there essentially is that when an attitude is revealed, it's like it's been in the background of the mind. It's been behind the scenes, kind of driving our experience. You know, don't like this experience. And when we're not aware of that, it kind of orients our attention. We may, you know, be, you know, oh, I don't like what's happening. Oh, how do I get rid of this? How do I fix it? How do I change it? You know, what should I pay attention to? How should I pay attention to it? All motivated by this not liking. But when we see that, instead of being behind the scenes, it becomes just something that we can be aware of. It becomes essentially, rather than an attitude hidden in the mind, it becomes an object. And any object is fine. We can be aware, oh, not liking is happening in the mind. We don't have to get rid of wrong attitude. We have to become aware of it. We can notice not liking with a balanced mind. And so we find our way to wise attitude or right attitude by getting to know, by allowing these reactive patterns to be revealed and seen with awareness. When we become aware of an attitude, aversion's happening or greed is happening, you don't have to then like put that under a microscope and then direct the attention to that. It's more like it's just become revealed. It's like it's been behind the scenes and now we're aware of it. There's not liking in the field, and there's seeing in the field, and there's hearing in the field, and there's bodies, and there's not liking in the field. So we just become aware that that is present. And it's just one of the many things happening in the present moment that awareness knows. So very simple. Relax. Am I aware? What am I aware of? And from time to time, check the relationship to experience. So, what we're going to do today, this time, you know, this morning, is primarily to offer the kind of frame to help you see the way we are going to be practicing here, orient your mind in this way. And Alexis is going to offer some instructions about walking in just a moment. And then we'll have a few announcements before we leave for the walking period at 9:30. And then at the next sitting at 10:15, and my apologies to those of you in the kitchen, I know you will miss this this guided meditation. We're going to do a guided meditation, but fortunately I believe those of you who are in the kitchen have all practiced this way before, so I'm sorry that you'll miss the guided meditation, but this is the way things work here. So we'll do a guided meditation at 10:15 to help you get a sense of how to practice with this in a simple way. And then this afternoon, we're not going to take questions now, but we'll have at the Dharma offering this afternoon at 4 o'clock, Alexis will begin with a few more comments about the practice, and then we'll open it to questions. So bring your questions. You know, you've got the day now to explore this practice. Bring your questions to the hall at 4 o'clock, and we will have some question and answer, questions and comments at 4 o'clock this afternoon. So Alexis will do some walking instructions, and then I'll make some announcements.
Okay. Good morning. You look a little bit more rested. So, the instructions for walking, we've left just a little bit of time for that, primarily because the walking instructions are almost identical to, well, they are identical to the sitting practice. I think one of the things that can happen in the way we think about meditation is that meditation looks like something. That it looks like the eyes are closed, or the body is still, or even that a pleasant experience is happening. And yet, when we take in the views that Andrea was offering, the wisdom aspect of understanding what practice is, we really can begin to recognize that whatever is happening, if it's stillness, there's a pleasant experience, there's aversion in the mind, if it's noticing the body is sitting, if it's noticing that the eyes are closed, if it's noticing that the eyes are open and that seeing is happening, that these are all things that are being known, objects. So object is another way of saying the experience. So if we can ever, any time that we can describe our experience, we know what our experience is, then we can say we know what the object is. That's what's being known. So if you know your own experience, you can say that's the object. what's happening. So then the walking meditation becomes something simply different objects. Body is moving. Might be noticing the legs, the sensations of the legs moving, the arms, maybe the temperature. Maybe those experiences become more obvious. And then if we don't restrict our awareness to the movement and movements of the body, at times we might wake up to the fact that sounds are being known, seeing is happening, maybe noticing the mood, the experience, the liking or not liking of walking, the desire to get back to the hall, to get back to the real meditation. Some people don't like the hall, so then it's the dreading coming back to the hall. Right, so whatever it is that we happen to notice, that's just the next experience that we can be mindful of. And then when we have that orientation that our practice is simply to notice the nature of the mind and the body, it means we can also move naturally. And some styles of practice might encourage to move slowly. In this flavor, we tend to encourage more of a natural movement. And I've found that typically if I move a little bit too slow, it's in a way that's more a little bit less natural for my body, my mind can tend to get a bit more tense, almost like it's looking for an experience. But this is just for you to explore and see what happens for you as you let the body move naturally at its own rhythm, what feels at that time, how you want to move. And maybe at times there's a sense of being more interested in slowing down. It's all right. And then noticing maybe that speed doesn't impact the quality of mindfulness. So right now I just invite you to, I sometimes don't offer this little exploration. So if you're interested, you can just put your hand out and maybe just start to become mindful of your hand, your sensations, whatever you're noticing, tingling, the temperature. And is there anyone that's finding it hard to be mindful of their hand in this moment? Everyone feeling somewhat aware of something about their hand, just the sensations? Okay, now just begin to move it. Slowly, just feeling the movement, maybe the air temperature. Okay, now just move it a little bit faster. Okay, now I'd like to see if you can shake the awareness off of your hand. Go ahead and see if you can move it fast enough that the awareness is shaken off. Come on, see if you can do that. Stop being aware of your hand. So these are new instructions. Secret teachings. Okay. So if you can, someone shook something off their hand over there. What was that? So just noticing that it can be playful like that. As you're moving the body and the mindfulness seems to be there, do you need to keep plugging the mind to notice something? Or maybe the mindfulness is there and just letting the body move and there's enough mindfulness. Then again, as Andrea was suggesting, maybe another tap when the mind gets distracted into thinking and what it's seeing and stories, and just a little bit of a reminder. The walking, some of you might be more accustomed to doing a back and forth walking, taking about 30 steps to do that. That's one way of doing the walking. And in this flavor of practice, we could also just explore any time you're moving to remind yourself that the body is moving, what can I be aware of? And if you want to take a longer path, even circular around the property, you can notice how that impacts the mindfulness and the difference between that and going back and forth. Really up to you how you want to explore that. Okay, I think we probably should. Do people start yogi jobs now? Yeah, okay.
So, did you done?
Yeah,
okay. I have a couple announcements. We need to have everybody wear shoes in the dining hall. It's kind of a legal thing. Definitely shoes in the kitchen, but also in the dining hall. So just remember if you're going into the dining hall. And you can also wear shoes in the downstairs area, just not on the carpet in the downstairs area. So just try to remember shoes in the dining hall. And then we'd also like to request that the walking room next door be reserved for the walking practice. Movement, you can do movement practice or yoga, qigong in your rooms. You can do it outside if you wish. You are also welcome to do it on the carpet in the community hall. So there are some other areas for movement. And then in the after dinner time, those of you who are doing dishwashing, pot washing after dinner, it's fine to come to that next sitting, which starts at 6:45. If you feel like you're not quite done, or you know that it would be real rush to finish your work meditation, just take your time with your work meditation, and it's fine to come to that sitting late. So just know that. And then at the 10:15 sitting, whoever is the bell ringer for that sitting, well, Alexis and I will be here at that sitting, so you don't need to sit up front and be the practice leader. But just also to remember, in general, if you've done the bell ringing outside, even if one of us is in the hall, that you will be doing bell ringing, you know, doing the ending of the sitting bell, which will hopefully be reminded because we are not sitting up here. So the bell is up here for you to ring. So enjoy your walking.